here. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations,
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com, and if you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, as well as if you're on Super chat room, scroll down and look at the People for People radio link over there at peopleforpeople.ning.com. go over there and join in on their chat and say hi to those nice folks. So cold electricity, what is it? it's kind of really simple in my mind, but a lot of folks don't even understand or even have, some may not even have ever heard that terminology, cold electricity. Well, if you go to my YouTube channel, which I posted the link to my YouTube channel in the chat rooms, both at People for People Radio Network and over there to Super Chat chat rooms. Because if you go to my YouTube channel and you look at the banner at the top, it says the home of high voltage. And why I say about high voltage, why am I always talking about high voltage? It's, man, my brain just shut off. High voltage. Well, when you talk about the natural way that we use electricity, I guess the conventional way that we use electricity, it requires a lot of current. And high voltage has some unique quality about it that it seems to defy all the other rules. Which means that, you know, with current, you meet resistance. And with that resistance, you generate a lot of heat. And that heat can be destructive, and most generally is destructive to whatever device you're trying to run with it. If it's using too much current, has too much current flowing through it, whether it be your transistors or resistors or your processors in your computer or, you know, anything you use, your electric motors and so on down the line. Well, that's because here in the United States, we push our current at about 60 hertz. We have about 120 volts at 60 hertz, and you know, maybe up to 220, maybe 240, just depending on what you're actually running with it. But for the most part, it's all at 60 hertz. And then overseas, they use 50 hertz. And it also seems like their appliances last a bit longer than ours for some reason. I wonder why that is. Because pushing it at 60 hertz seems to be, pushing that thermal breakdown barrier a lot sooner than it would otherwise. So, you know, just by backing off on the current, you still can get the thing to run right. And you seem to not reach that thermal breakdown point as soon, although you're still pushing a lot of power, more power necessary than it actually takes to run that individual device. Now, an example of what I'm talking about is if you got a cell phone charger and it's plugged into your wall, you go over there and you put your hand on that cell phone charger casing and you can feel there's heat to it. It's warm. It's warm to the touch. And depending on how long it's actually been plugged in, it might be a little bit hotter. So I've never really taken a measurement, a temperature measurement of the actual wall outlets and the plugs, the adapter plugs that you push in there. But maybe you have to go out there and buy me one of those digital thermometers or whatever and see what temperatures those are actually running at. Which I'm pretty sure I actually really do need to get one for the experiments that I want to share with people when I get my new lab finished up over here. Because when I was doing all the experiments about, radiant energy and Tesla's patents and a whole bunch more, I realized that high voltage didn't have the limitations of the resistance that normal power, the normal AC power coming out of the wall, or even, for that matter, DC power. Now, one of the things that high voltage was capable of doing was actually escaping through some pretty heavy-duty insulators. You know, the electric cord that you got around your, all your plug-ins that you go to the deal. It's got an insulator that's rated for so many volts. And so after that, you know, it can actually, go through the insulation. Well, with high voltage, it was kind of strange that when you look at these wires, you could actually, visually see when you turn the light out, you can see a coronal discharge around these wires, a plasma effect that is actually around these wires as this high voltage was traveling through. And I was using wire that they normally use in the back of TV sets because there's a high voltage deal back there. And so you always want to be careful if you're ever inside of a old TV, even after you turn it off, because it can still store up a bit of a charge. But when you look at that wiring, like I said, when you got these high voltage, high frequencies running through there, you can see a really beautiful purple corona around the wire. And so that got me thinking even more about Tesla, what he was talking about and such. And so I did tons and tons of research into all different types of things that he was working with, and the voltages and the reasoning behind everything. So with that said, I basically called my YouTube channel the home of high voltage, Mad Science Channel, the home of high voltage, because without that resistance, you can move that energy that you want around rapidly. You can move it in a manner in which the wires don't get hot. And so, taking that all in consideration, and then these latest experiments that I've done with the DDS signal generator, pulse in a microwave oven transformer at approximately 9 volts output, it's about 5 volts input, after the transformer, obviously, that you plug into your 120 volt outlet. And I was able to ramp that voltage up, and keep in mind that at this stage in the game, I didn't want any current, as least amount of current as physically possible in this process, because the whole entire deal was to see how I could move that energy around from one place to the next and use that and store that energy to turn it back into, basically the type of energy that we understand now that we use as far as DC or AC, power. And so, in this process, I basically use my hand as a thermometer. That's really obviously not accurate, but you can tell when something's hot or, whatever, warm to the touch. And so I'm constantly reaching around, touching things all the time, on the equipment to see what's getting warm and what's not getting warm. Well, the process, the way that I've run this entire system, throughout every single stage, including the stage where you're actually pulsing from the DDS signal generator, nothing's getting hot. The signal generator isn't being overworked. The microwave oven transformer is not getting hot. The capacitors after that not getting hot. The full wave bridge rectifier to change the AC into DC is not getting hot. And yet the power was able to keep continuously going through the system just like it would have normally, with the exception is that nothing's getting hot. And so if you look at these 1000 volts, they'll hold up to, I think, about 100 amps bridge rectifiers. They actually have built-in heat sinks for just such a purpose as, when you're running current through there, those things will get pretty toasty because they're meeting resistance and they're resisting that current flow. And so, the heat sinks are on there, and it actually probably keeps it colder than normal because the voltage is able to go through the rectifier. The rectifier is able to do the same exact job without any current involved in the deal. If there is any measurable current, it's so ridiculously small that it's insignificant. And so nothing at this stage is getting hot. And so when you factor that in, is that what they call cold electricity? That you're moving this power from one place to the next, and you're actually getting a strong amount of power through this system that is not affecting it temperature-wise. It's able to move through freely without any kind of resistance, and so therefore it's not generating the heat losses that your normal system would have to endure. So anyway, after that stage, I dump that DC energy into storage banks. Basic, just a DC capacitor rated at much more voltage than, you know, I'm actually producing out the output of the DC rectifier, which is important because, you know, you want a wide space for that energy to be able to flow freely without ever backing up. So, unless I just sat there and never took any power off there, I wouldn't be able to completely fill that capacitor to its full capacity and then overcharge it to where it self-discharges across the poles. So, what I'm able to do is I'm able to keep a strong, steady flow of energy in those capacitors that then in turn can be starts being staged down back to the usable power that you would have otherwise had before this entire system. And so they have what they call ultra capacitors, or some call them boost capacitors or whatever. They're modern day capacitors that work more like batteries. And so I'm able to pressurize these canisters, these capacitors, the regular DC capacitors. I'm able to pressurize these things that then in turn can allow that second style of capacitor, which is the boost capacitors or ultra capacitors. Either one, it's still the way that they're designed is to actually work more like a battery than a capacitor. They're a combination of the two. But I'm able to charge these things fully and be able to move that power on down the line through other systems and other different sizes of capacitors. I've got a mixed match of capacitors. I've got large capacitors. I've got very small capacitors. And all of them will only accept what they actually can hold. So I don't have to worry about blowing up capacitors because I'm not putting a lot of current to it. I'm not putting current to it in the conventional sense. All I'm doing is equally distributing out the voltage into each one of these systems. And so when the little tiny capacitor gets filled up, it just basically closes the gate down, so to speak, and allows that current just to flow right on by to find the least path of resistance. Another larger capacitor where it can start pressurizing that capacitor. And you can even use the same concept for, stepping down, that power, like if you got a huge tank and then a smaller tank, and then a smaller tank, and so on down the line until you're all the way down to maybe like a thimble-sized tank. Everything above that largest tank will remain completely full until that largest tank becomes empty. So I'm able to store a surplus of energy, and all I got to do from that point on is basically trickle charge it, just to keep a constant flow of power going into that. And so that means that every load underneath that only requires a certain amount of voltage to run will run constant until that large tank gets empty, and then you can watch as these go stage by stage and shut down from largest to smallest, and it finally gets down to where in one system I have just a simple blinking little LED that will sit there and run for a long period of time even after the entire system has drained itself all the way down. And then all the way down to the smallest load, which would be, you know, a little piezoelectric speaker that would sit there and beep until the last remaining bit of voltage finally was, you know, equally distributed out, and it's all basically empty. So the amazing thing about this whole entire process is that none of it generates the resistance that causes the heat that makes things eventually reach their thermal breakdown and fail. I've used the same exact 555 timer, which is a little switching circuit that's pretty cool. You can use it in a lot of different types of circuitry. But I've used that same exact 555 timer with this type of energy for so many years, I can't even remember how long back. If you go back and look at some of the videos that I did, one of them called Homing Beacon, and some of the different little gizmos that I made around that period of time, that's how long that 555 timer has actually been functioning to actually pulse some of that energy that comes in into a argon filled what they use in fluorescent bulbs. It's a fluorescent bulb starter filled up with argon, but it actually generates plasma inside that bulb. So that 555 timer switching little coils on and off and actually generating plasma inside that bulb. So that thing, from, you know, just with normal usage, running a let's say a 9 volt battery or something like that, that thing would have enough current to it that it would actually start to get hot, you know, as it resisted that current flow. But the way that these systems work with the capacitors, the energy is not producing the type of current, you know, in the conventional sense that would cause these these parts to get hot. And so, don't get me wrong, with a high voltage, you can actually generate heat if you so choose to do so, but you can regulate the temperature in the portions that you don't want to generate heat so ridiculously simple that it's mind-blowing. And if you want to generate heat, you understand how that energy is traveling and how, you know, at different frequency ranges, you can actually produce plasma. And at that plasma, in that little gizmo that I was talking about that was using the 555 timer, inside that argon bulb, there is heat. There's a lot of heat at the heart of that plasma. So it's doing something pretty amazing. You were, at one sense, you got an energy that, is pretty well safe to the touch. I mean, at higher voltages, yeah, it's unpleasant, but it won't kill you. And that's one of the strange side effects of what Tesla was doing. I mean, he was standing around thousands, if not millions, of volts of electricity, and it would just pass right through him without killing him. Now, you couldn't do that with the conventional way that we generate power because, you know, the current is so high, that it would just kill you. And since our body is electrical and, we have electrical impulses that send signals throughout our brain and tell our muscles and stuff like that what to do, then obviously you don't want to be disrupted by, you know, a voltage that your electrical system in your mind or your body can actually handle. When your mind sends a weak little signal down to your muscles, it tells your muscles to contract. So when that little electrical signals hit those muscles, you can grip things and you can lift heavy objects, by focusing your mind and sending that power down to that muscle. And it's pretty impressive. But also, if you've ever been shocked by anything, you notice that it suddenly grabs your muscle and it just puts a cramp in there. That's too much power. You're overcharging those muscles, and that's why they squeeze down like that. So, the human body is a pretty amazing machine. But, you know, it's electrical in nature. And so with that said, the fact that Tesla could actually, you know, stand around in the midst of all this power while he's doing his experiments and not be totally bowled over or even dead for that matter was, you know, basically the reason why the term cold electricity even showed up on the scene there. Because it didn't kill him. And it's amazing. I mean, he was sitting there in a field of energy holding fluorescent light bulbs out in the midair and energizing the gas inside them bulbs way before fluorescent bulbs ever were invented. Tesla had bulbs that were gas filled that he would put in inside these energetic fields and be able to light these bulbs up. And you know, some people looked at him like he was a wizard, you know, hey, that's amazing. And even to this day, you get one of these little Slayer exciter circuits, which is basically a miniaturized style Tesla coil. You know, he uses a tip 42C transistor and a resistor and a diode and some turns of wire and, you know, a 9-volt battery, and you can sit there and do wireless energy transfer and, you know, hold a light bulb out there mid-air, one of the fluorescent bulbs that won't work in the conventional deal because the little preheaters inside the bulb are burned up, the little tungsten elements, but the gas is still in there, and so you're able to energize that gas into the plasma state and see visible light from it. It's pretty impressive. But, so, the term cold electricity, you know, it just depends on who you actually listen to. It's all high-tech terminology for the most part. People, you know, when they're talking about it, like Eric Dollard and, you know, Peter Linderman or something like that, when they're all talking about it, I might play bits of their podcast of this deal. But when you hear the terminology and the way that they're talking about it and some of the words that they're using, it might not make sense and actually could get a little bit boring if if you was listening to it. But some of the things that they showed in these videos, which I did post the links to these videos over there in the Super chat room, but some of the things that they showed in these were pretty incredible. You know, the way that they were using electricity, able to light up light bulbs without the conventional style of current that you would see. And this is another reason why, you know, there was a big feud in the old days back when I was trying to build the Dream Team, when I was telling everybody that I did not care about current watts and amps. Well, one of the particular characters involved in that situation wanted to be, you know, pretty upset about it, and so, you know, took it to the extremes, you know, and basically broke up the Dream Team. And what they didn't understand at the time was it wasn't because that I'm trying to get around the standard way of measuring electricity, is because of the research that I was involved in had nothing to do with current watts and amps at this stage in the game. What I was trying to show was that you can take the conventional energy, whether it be from a 12-volt battery or even, you know, a wall outlet, and you can change that energy. You know, the laws of physics state energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. And so what I did was I basically did what Tesla did. I ramped that AC current up, I ramped the DC current up, and I put it into a state of matter that you couldn't measure with standard equipment. So none of the mathematics would apply at this stage in the game. This is why I said I didn't care about current watts and amps, because you couldn't take your normal voltmeter and measure this type of energy. You know, when it's in a plasma state, you can't take a regular voltmeter and measure it. You know, at high voltages, them voltmeters will just freak out. Even at high frequencies, you can actually make one of those those doggone digital voltmeters essentially brain dead, you know. You might get by with getting a little bit of measurement out of, you know, an analog version that only requires, you know, a little coil to move a little needle or something like that. But even at that, you're not going to get accurate measurements. And so, at that stage, when I'm talking about how I don't care about current watts and amps, it's not because I'm saying that you can run everything in your house without current watts and amps as it stands, because the way that the system's set up, it's inefficient, and you can measure current watts and amps in those systems. But from changing the energy from the standard waveform into a new style of energy closer to what we would call cold electricity, the standard forms of measurements don't apply. Now, there are ways that you can hook up things to capture radiant energy and get a general idea how many volts there are involved in the deal, or even to the extent of the frequency ranges involved in the deal. And so, you know, there are some kind of measurements that you could take out of the deal, but it's still, it's not going to be in the standard form. And, you know, cold electricity, you know, the way that you measure, you know, like amperage or whatever, you got to have that current flow and that resistance involved in order to be able to tell how many amps is being drawn off of a given system. So, none of the standard measurements apply at this stage in the deal. But, you know, there were folks in the circle who couldn't get their heads wrapped around that, couldn't get their, you know, head out of the book long enough, couldn't think outside the box long enough to understand that what I was trying to say to them had nothing to do with what they were thinking. And so maybe, you know, my explanation wasn't as good back then. I don't know. But either way, you know, we lost a lot of time as far as research and the dream team and all that kind of stuff, as far as getting to where I seen us going, if we understood what Tesla was talking about radiant energy. With radiant energy, because they said that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, then where does it go? So I just ramped it up and changed it into a completely different frequency range and a different waveform, and now it doesn't mesh. It won't run the average appliance anymore. So how do you measure that? Well, you can't, not with standard equipment, and you can, like I said, you could hook a oscilloscope up and you can get a different type of frequency range, but even at that, you got to be careful because of the components inside there. If you're too high of a voltage or too high of a frequency, you can burn it up. And, you know, so the simple of it is, we changed the energy, we didn't destroy it, and we moved it from point A to point B, and in the process was able to ramp the voltage up to ridiculous amounts, way more voltage than we put in. Now, a lot of people like to talk about over unity, getting out more power than you put in, and regardless of that, you know, that terminology right there is like taboo in the alternative energy community as well as in the scientific community, because, you know, call it, according to the laws of thermodynamics or whatever, that you can't, you know, there's losses in the system and you can never get out more energy than you put in. And so what we're doing here is just mincing words. That's all we're doing. We're twisting words around and, you know, cherry picking, you know, results and such to show, oh, well, you know, you got all this voltage, but you ain't got no current. You can't run nothing with it. It's because they don't understand that energy is still the same energy. It's just moving faster at this stage in the game. Now, if you take the actual electricity that's coming to your home, you know, it comes down that wire at a ridiculous amount of voltage and is at a high enough frequency that you couldn't use it in your house. that energy that's coming down that telephone or the electrical line, it would burn your house down. It's not usable power at that stage in the game. But because they understood some of the concepts about what I've been trying to show people, and they were able to use capacitance and transformer, step down transformers with the number of windings, and so you're shoving all this high voltage down in there, the capacitor starts to store pressure in the form of voltage, and it's pulsing into these transformers that have really thick windings on there, and so that voltage drops down and the current smooths out, and you start to get usable power at this stage in the game. And from that point, and only that point, the standard measurements apply. You couldn't measure that power line the same way that you do the output of that transformer. This is what I was trying to point out back in the day when the people got so frustrated because I said, I don't care about current watts and amps. I don't need current watts and amps to energize a gas into this fourth state of matter being plasma. I don't need that. That high voltage, high frequency, starting at about 60 volts, you can light up neon gas, And even 60 volts and 60 hertz, you can light up neon gas. There's a little neon bulbs and a lot of different test things to test AC power or whatever. And, if you look inside those deals, you'll notice that there's a resistor that cuts down the current and, basically ramps up the voltage on the other side. And you see that little neon bulb can be lit up. But when I see a neon bulb, I see something completely different than what your normal electrician or whatever sees. I see potential. I see plasma because science says that light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. That's what they said. But regardless, if you got visible light, you got some temperature involved in there. I posted a couple video links in there about cold electricity. One particular individual was essentially taking a high voltage power output, I think of 10 kV or something like that, 10 kilovolt. But I posted the video link inside there, and he's showing where he's actually using high voltage at a high frequency and basically energizing tungsten element light bulbs, fluorescent element light bulbs, fluorescent light bulbs, and in the process he's doing this while it's underwater, and he sticks his finger in the water while this thing is in doing what it's doing, and he's not getting electrocuted because of the way that energy is actually traveling. I also posted another video link in the chat room where, Eric Dollard and Peter Lindemann and one other character in there, I can't remember which one that was, were doing the experiments, and their terminology, like I said, is a little different than what I try to make things as simple as possible so that you can understand what it is that I'm saying. I'm not trying to turn anybody into a rocket scientist or sound like a rocket scientist. I'm trying to explain in simplicity how energy travels the way that it does. Regardless of what it's actually called or what it actually is, or we got a lot of theories about everything, including the electron and so on down the line. Even the way that I explain plasma, there's some people that don't like the way that I explain plasma. And, hey, to each his own, but I'm trying to explain it in a simple way. But either way, when that high voltage and high frequency comes in there, it's smashing things around in there, shaking things up, producing friction, which in turn produces heat, which in turn produces light. So you've got radiant energy, you got light, and you actually, like if you go back to the mercury arc rectifier back in the late 1800s, they used a mercury arc rectifier to change high voltage AC and rectify that and turn it into high voltage DC so that they could run Edison's elevator motors off of Tesla's AC current. So it was pretty impressive, but it was the equivalence of the first plasma reactor that I know of that, you know, was actually a rectifier. And the implications of what could have been, this thing could have been used for back then, is what I'm trying to bring to the forefront now. The plasma reactor has a lot of capabilities. And, you know, basically being able to generate light with less amount of input power, and, you know, be able to generate heat with less amount of input power, and be able to generate radiant energy at whatever determined frequency you want with a lot of lot less input power. Now, you know, there's pros and cons about every type of electricity. Now, when you start to go into high voltages, you got to be aware of certain other things, you know, like the insulation factor of things or whatever, you know, so that you can get this energy to move around safely without getting yourself electrocuted or whatever. When Tesla was running his coils and stuff like that, he noticed that there were objects in the room that were made of metal and different types of metal for that matter, that had stored power on them, and when you reached out to touch something, that was energized, you see an electrical discharge across to your finger. And so that type of stuff I actually got to witness in my own lab when I was running my high voltage experiments, about how waveform would interact with different things, and there's some amazing things that are unexplained that this high voltage, high frequency is capable of. I tested around with tons and tons of different frequency ranges and got many different results. Some not so good and some pretty impressive, you know, like I was saying, went on a camping trip one day, and I'm laying there in the middle of the night after I'd done a couple days worth of experiments at certain frequency ranges, and I could actually feel like I had like a little energy, like electrons moving in between my fingers. When I brought my fingers close to one another, it felt like I was charged up. And also felt like I'd drunk 100 pots of coffee in the last couple days, that I was all energized. And so there are, some, like I said, some pros and cons when you're talking about messing around with high voltage, high frequencies, different frequency ranges, and so on and so forth, you'll hear people out there all the time talking about how different things like Wi-Fi signals will bother them, or they keep hearing noises or whatever. That's because your brain is sitting there working, with electricity, and those fields are interacting with each other. You know, there's a reason why they made that billboard that was able to literally, without having an audible sound, send a signal out, and somebody would hear something inside their head. They figured some things out about that deal. But anytime two magnetic fields come in contact with each other, they will interact accordingly. Most generally, the strongest magnetic field will win out, and it'll absorb the other magnetic field, basically canceling it out. But that's not exactly what I'm trying to get to as far as today, what I'm talking about, cold electricity. I'm talking about a different way to use energy that Tesla was pretty much trying to show people. We all know about wireless energy transfer. You know, if you send a radio signal over to another tower, and that other tower being in tune with the transmitter on the other side is able to receive that frequency range. And if both sides are tunable, then that means you could tune to like your favorite radio station on this side for the transmitter, and then tune to that same range on the opposite side and still be able to receive that signal. So you can have a multitude of layer after layer after layer after layer of different frequency ranges simultaneously going down to the other receivers over there, and all of them being able to pick up, just like your regular radio station is able to receive. You know, when you're in between channels, you get static. You know, you hear something going on, but it's just not clear. You got to be actually in tune in order to be able to hear that radio station. So they got it figured out, but they use it in the form of radio and television and cell phone technology so that you can, you know, have communications and such. But it's all still the same energy, folks. It's not different. It's either just sped up or slow down, or, you know, whatever. Like the physics say, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but you can change it. You can move it around. And moving it around efficiently means that you can get this power from point A to point B without all the losses that you would normally incur during, you know, normal usage, the conventional way that we use electricity. You're pushing too much power to these appliances. Your computer has more power than it needs in order to be able to function properly. That bridge rectifier, it doesn't require current. It will do the same exact job that it was designed to do with electricity, you know, to change an AC wave into a DC wave. So I can run straight voltage through that thing and still get straight voltage out the other side. I can run high voltage AC into that rectifier and on the opposite side get high voltage DC out the other side. So this is what I was trying to get at back in the day. The plasma reactor has a lot of potential, a lot of capabilities. I've done videos, plasma water heater and such, and there's other people out there doing all kinds of things. You see, they got plasma cutters. There's all kinds of things involving plasma as far as electricity goes that are pretty mind-blowing. But if you understand how this energy travels and you understand where the flaws of the system that we're using right now and the losses in the system, you can understand why there are people out there that don't believe there's such thing as free energy, that they don't, they say the laws of physics basically reject that notion that there is a such thing as free energy. Regardless of the fact that there's so much energy going around us at any given time, just look at all the things that are happening in nature. The wind blowing, the sun shining, little molecules, particles of dust. We're standing in the universe of things that we can't see with our eyes that are crashing into each other or exchanging power. You know, rubbing your feet on the carpet or whatever. Even that wind blowing past you. You notice on certain days with lower humidity or higher cold or whatever that you get more static buildup and such like that. So when you look at this mechanically and understand what it is, then it starts to make sense to you why it is that Tesla was able to do the things that he did back in the day. And why it is that you now have wireless energy transfer as far as communications. Now, there's nothing stopping the world from actually using wireless energy to transfer energy from one deal through the medium to the other deal in order to be able to have electricity without all the cables involved inside there. And keep in mind, those cables, if you're trying to push the conventional, will meet resistance, and so you'll have losses in the system. But in the way that even the power company these days is actually using it, that energy's traveling down that wire a little different than you would normally think. You know, most folks think that the energy is actually traveling through the heart of that wire, but it's not. Some people call it the skin effect, where that energy is just kind of using that copper wire or even aluminum wire for that matter as railroad tracks. You're guiding that energy, sending it down to where you want it to go. That energy is just looking for a place to balance out. It's looking for a path to ground. And that's why people, have designed things like lightning arresters or lightning rods in order to, when this high voltage discharge happens, you don't want it to hit, your transformer, overcharge your transformer and blow that transformer out, so they make it so that anything over a certain amount of voltage will actually transfer that that power straight down into the earth ground. Short it out, safety things. But the whole key is how that energy is actually traveling, And so with that said, there are things that if you found an understanding of how this energy was working out, you can see things like, right now that you can go out and buy little cell phone chargers that work with your cell phone wirelessly. And I used to say all the time, at some point in the game, when you call your friend, that radio frequency is actually going to help keep that conversation going longer, because your signal is actually going to be helping to keep their phone charged. Or when you're using it on demand, you might not be able to stay on there, as indefinitely, but you would definitely be on there longer than you would have otherwise, just because of the battery's capability of being recharged while you're talking on the phone by the same signal that is the incoming signal that your phone is receiving. You gotta admit, folks, your cell phones are pretty doggone impressive as far as how long those batteries will last while that thing's continuously on. It's continuously talking back and forth with whatever Wi-Fi signal you got or any cell phone tower in the neighborhood. And, you have to put it in a certain mode if you want to shut that down. Otherwise, it'll constantly, if it's out of range, it'll constantly keep sending a signal out trying to find, a tower. And it'll eventually run your battery down quicker. But when it's within range of a tower or a Wi-Fi signal, it's, for some reason, will stay charged for days and then slowly start to discharge down to where, it's time to plug it in. But otherwise, it would have went dead because there's not enough stored power in there without some sort of incoming signal that is assisting, at the very least, to charge that battery back up. So it's pretty amazing stuff what Tesla put out there on the table for everybody. And these folks, they know what I'm talking about. And that energy that's coming from your cell phone, it's not going to run your house in the frequency range that it's being pumped out at. But you can take that same energy and you can step it back down. It's all the same power. No matter what you want to call it, we talk about frequency ranges anywhere from 0 hertz all the way up to kilohertz and whatever, megahertz. It's just faster. It's moving faster. It's like slapping that water, one right after another. You keep tapping and those waves keep rippling it out. And eventually you'll build up such momentum that, it will start to slosh over the container that the water is in. And so, with that said, I'm going to play this little deal real quick here.
Tesla had begun to explore the possibility of transmitting energy without wires. Here is a simple glass tube, he told his astonished audience. Wherever I move it in space, its soft, pleasing light persists with undiminished brightness.
People were used to incandescent lamps, lamps with filaments, but this idea of a light bulb with no filament that could turn on with absolutely no connection to wire or to a battery.
The The lamps were Tesla's own invention, the forerunners of today's fluorescent tubes. Incandescent bulbs glowed hot. Tesla called his tubes cold light.
Cold light is a bulb with gases in it, and when electricity is nearby, it lights up. It's wireless. You don't have to have all kinds of wiring to make it work. You just have to have ambient electricity.
So, basically, that was just a little short clip talking about Tesla lighting up light bulbs in midair. You know, you get, if you understand what this energy is actually doing and how it affects everything around, the gases, or even water for that matter. Water is a dipole molecule which has a north and a south field on it, and so it's like a little tiny magnet, so to speak. And so whenever you send a wave through that little tiny magnet with the north and the south, every time those waves, peaks and valleys go through that water molecule, it causes that water molecule to try to right itself and rocks back and forth. And you know, with these going through several water molecules that are rubbing up against each other, producing friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food. That's how microwave technology works. Well, and that was something that Tesla figured out with these different types of noble gases, that you could get these noble gases to do this. And so we got, nowadays we got the new modern day fluorescent light bulbs, and if you understand how them fluorescent light bulbs work, there's a tungsten element in each end of them. So the 120 volts AC that we're running over here basically heats up that element, which heats up that gas, and gets that gas primed and ready to, be energized by the high voltage side of the ballast. And so when that high voltage wave goes in there, it energizes that gas into the plasma state, and so we have light. Well, the same thing with the mercury arc rectifier. Basically, if you can visualize it, the mercury arc rectifier looked like a glass octopus almost, had anodes and cathodes on it. And so when you put the high voltage AC in one side, there's a little pool of mercury down in the bottom of that thing, and that would basically create a dead short with that high voltage AC coming in. And that would vaporize that mercury into gas. And so when that mercury was vaporized into gas, it was no longer a dead short, but that energy was still able to come in there at high voltages and energize that mercury vapor into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Well, that didn't destroy the energy. All it done was pressurize the container so that the energy couldn't go backwards again. And you only got a one-way traveling of this energy out. So you ended up with DC current off of an AC input at high voltages so that they could use that DC power to run Tesla's or Edison's elevator motors at that time. So it was a pretty interesting deal. I'm going to play this podcast right here that has Peter Linderman and Eric Dollard and one other guy I can't remember in there. But I hope it don't turn into a snooze fest. I might stop it and talk about a few things along the way, but it's interesting. If you're trying to figure out about wireless energy and free energy, and you're into alternative energy, this is some of the research that was done by a couple different people that was exploring what Tesla was trying to show people back in the day. So I'm going to push this one, and let's see where we get. Eric Dollard, Peter Lindemann, and thank you. Sorry, it's got crazy music at the beginning of it.
Suburban wastelands of Southern California, and we're taking a look at Tesla's longitudinal electricity. The electricity in general use today is transverse electromagnetism, and what Tesla was experimenting with in his types of experiments was called longitudinal dielectricity, a polar opposite to that, and we're doing advanced research into that type of electricity. Now we'll take a quote here from the book Experiments with Alternate Currents of High Potential and High Frequency, which has an appendix called The Transmission of Electric Energy Without Wires. And to quote Nikola Tesla, toward the close of 1898, a systematic research carried on for a number of years with the object of perfecting a method of transmission of electrical energy through the natural medium led me to recognize three important necessities. First, to develop a transmitter of great power. Second, to perfect means for individualizing and isolating the energy transmitted. And third, to ascertain the laws of propagation of currents through the earth and atmosphere. Now, the transmission of great power was, of course, carried on by Nikola Tesla in his Colorado Springs experiments, which led to the building of the Wardenclyffe Tower, which was to transmit electrical energy around the earth. And the second point, the means of individualizing the currents, was in his experiments with harmonic resonance circuits, such as you're going to see today in this video. And third, the laws of propagation are his one wire and wireless power transmission, where he demonstrated longitudinal currents rather than the transverse currents, which he did not feel were all that swell for propagation of electricity. So here today we're going to see some experiments in this, and now to give you an introduction to the experiments by showing Tesla's patent and the schematic that we're using is Peter Lindemann, Director of Borderland Sciences.
Hi, I'm Peter Lindemann, Vice President of the Borderland Sciences Research Foundation. Today I'm going to explain to you the basic experimental setup, which we're going to demonstrate in a little minute. Over here we have a schematic drawing of our experimental setup. And down here, I'd like to first bring your attention to Nikola Tesla's patent number 649621, which was granted on May 15, 1900. Basically, this describes the experimental setup which we will attempt to show you today. And I'd like to describe it for you right now. This is a transmission and receiving system for what he called his wireless power transmission. The exact name of the patent is Apparatus for Transmission of Electrical Energy. And it consists of a generator system which produces the appropriate types of currents, which goes through a two-loop primary on this device here. This is the thick, darker line around, which you can see on your television screen. Inside here is a flat spiral coil, which is connected to ground at the outside of the spiral, and on the inside of the spiral is attached to what he calls the termination, which in the case of the Colorado Springs experiment was a ball, a sphere that was high up in the air. The receiving apparatus is identical in nature, consisting of a termination, a flat spiral coil, and a connection to the ground. And the outside primary or secondary of this system is attached to the loads. So that describes the patents, the patent that Tesla was granted in 1900. Now what I'd like to do is describe for you the exact apparatus which we will be testing for you today. Our generator system consists of this much of our diagram here, which includes a medical Tesla coil circa 1920, which produces our supply of electrical induction. We also have a capacitor to create circulating currents in this, which is a 0.001 microfarad 15,000 volt capacitor built by the Faraday Corporation. And we have two hydrogen spark gap tubes, 1B22 here, and this creates a negative resistance which helps to accelerate the wave. So this is what we're using to supply the appropriate currents to our primary of our coil here, which is a two-turn flat coil made out of sheet copper. This showing the two turns, just like the two turns shown in the diagram here. Our secondary is made up of, our termination in this case is a neon bulb, which acts as a plasma, which in these low power systems works better than a large sphere. That's connected to our flat spiral. In this case, our flat spiral is made out of Teflon-coated silver coaxial cable, of which we're just using the outside shielding, the silver shielding, and not the inner wire, because these currents operate primarily using what's called the skin effect. And then our output, which is at the outside of the flat spiral, our output here. And now we will run a number of experiments attaching various things to our output here, showing various behaviors. Our second apparatus is identical. It has an input at the outside of the flat spiral made out of silver coaxial with Teflon coating on it, and going up to a second termination, and a second series resonant, harmonic resonant circuit, which is tuned exactly the way our transmitter is, with two turns of flat copper sheet and connected to a second 0.001 microfarad capacitor, identical to this one. And so these two primary circuits, one of which is energized, the other of which operates in harmonic resonance, makes up our circuit. We will attach loads to this output, as well as putting various devices in here for the transmission of our electric currents. So this is our test setup. And now I'd like to introduce Eric Dollard, who will first show us the actual physical setup of our test apparatus today, and then we will run the experiments. Eric?
Hi, my name is Eric Dollard, and I'll be running the experimental setup for the Tesla wireless transmission system. We'll go through our diagram here on the board, which Peter showed a little earlier, but now we'll show you the actual devices. For a supply of electrical induction, we have an old Fisher Medical Tesla coil from roughly around 1920 to 1930, which in itself is a complete little wireless transmitter, but we're just going to use it to charge up our high voltage capacitor shown here on the diagram, which is a old mica capacitor from shortwave radio transmitters used also around the 20s. We use these kind of capacitors because they have a very low inductance and very low hysteresis losses, and you can deliver really strong, high-power impulses. And here's our 1B22 hydrogen vibratron tubes that we're using as spark gaps. You can use a number of other things for spark gaps, such as quenched gaps or rotating commutators with these tubes. Work pretty good for this, and they don't put out a lot of light or noise. And the negative resistance of the hydrogen plasma increases the rate which the discharge occurs and produces stronger transients. Our primary coil is two turns of copper right here on the large transmitter unit. Hold this up a little bit, you might be able to see actual strips of copper on the primary, and then our secondary resonant coil. And of course our coil is shown here on the diagram. I might want to point out that this coil is not just a simple inductance coil, nor is this thing just a simple transformer. The interturning capacitance plays a very important part in this coil to give it a very strong resonant frequency. And the resonant frequency of our primary oscillating circuit here is chosen to fall on one of the fundamental harmonics of resonance of this complex network of mutual inductions and capacities which the spiral makes up. And we'll go through a frequency sweep and what have you later to determine exactly what these are.
I'll pause that just for a second. The capacitors that these folks are using right here, basically using this to smooth out the signal, like you said, but also when they're doing their spark gap, it's not an open air spark gap like you see in a lot of different Tesla coils that you see out there on YouTube or whatever. And back in the day, I used to use an old car headlamp that came out of a car that was burned out, and I used that for a vacuum spark gap because it had noble gas. I think it was argon inside that particular one, and so it would keep any atmosphere away from the spark gap, because if you have an open air spark gap and you see people that blow air across that, that's because they're trying to get that spark gap quenched so that it smooths out that signal going across there. Otherwise, you know, intermittent molecules, even something as simple as dust can affect that, and so you got a choppy wave on the opposite side. So with a sealed deal like what they're doing, they have a hydrogen plasma going on inside there. It helps to strengthen that signal going through and so on down the line. But even with just regular noble gases like argon or neon, it'll do the same exact job. It seems that hydrogen does the best. But either way, so you don't have an open air spark gap in the system that they're explaining, and you're sending this high voltage, high frequency through the system. And if you understand about the capacitors, there are different uses of capacitors. In the system that I'm using, I use capacitors not in the conventional way that you would see them used. Like, for example, after the microwave oven transformer, I have what would normally be called a run capacitor. Run capacitors are used for starting up your motor, and or start capacitor. They're used for starting up your motor because your electric motor, because it will pack a punch. So when you turn your power on, these aren't meant for long durations of a lot of current. It just stores up a bunch of power and then discharges it to punch that motor to get it started if the motor's under any kind of load or whatever. But since I'm only using voltage and I'm not exceeding the amount of voltage that those capacitors are able to handle, then I'm able to send that energy wave through there from the microwave oven transformer and not harm these, but still be able to hold on that that punch, so to speak. So that by the time it gets to the rectifier and I'm getting ready to change it from AC current into DC current, it's still a strong signal on the opposite side. The capacitors that I'm using for the initial storage bank are regular DC capacitors ran in series so that I can have as much storage space as possible. And then from that point on, I can draw off of each individual in a parallel fashion to the boost capacitors or ultracapacitors that you heard me talk about earlier. And so as long as those capacitors are rated for a higher voltage, I don't have to worry about those either. But the simple of the deal is a combination. If you understand what each one of these capacitors are, their actual purpose in the system is for, then you can use them in this system that basically is using the equivalence of what we would like to call cold electricity. It's not requiring current to move that power from one place to the next. And it doesn't require near the amount of power input that you would actually think because of the way that you're able to move that energy and how quickly and without meeting a resistance where you're not generating that waste heat. So, anyway, let me keep on going with this right here.
Our termination is an argon bulb. And our output terminal on the outside of the spiral comes down here to a little banana plug, which we can plug various things into. This coil here serves as a loading coil to help couple the energy out into the rest of the system, increase the efficiency. So this basically would simulate maybe the impedance of the earth or the transmission medium in general to give the coil something to work into. Okay, to start off with, our transmission path is a simple plasma column, and then we have our conjugate receiving coil, which has exactly all the same characteristics except it's wound in the opposite direction. And it finally ends up with its final tuning capacitor, the same tune circuit as the primary, so naturally you're going to get flow between the two because of their resonance, and then we have the end result, which is a 15-watt light bulb, which will be our resistance load we'll connect across the output here. And we'll have Tom turn the switch on and we'll see it go. So, of course, the load is lit, and we have a single wire path going from the receiving transformer through the plasma column to the loading coil and off to the transmitter coil. The single wire method of electrical transmission.
Not so sure if you could hear that because in the background, but he's talking about how this is a single wire transfer of power. And so that's another good thing about high voltage. Once you understand what's going on there, if you look out at your power poles out there, unlike what it would have been if there was DC where you have to have a return path, so you'd have two wires out there, there's a single wire coming down that pole. Coming down, yeah, each one across those poles that ends up going into that transformer. So sending in one single wire high voltage signal, which on the opposite side of the spectrum has earth ground connected to it, so there is basically your return path. Using the entire earth as the equivalence of a tank circuit like you would in the system that I'm talking about. So, you know, if you understand how this energy is traveling, it's trying to find a path to ground, and you can use that ground as a way to guide that power where you want it. And when it goes into that transformer, it starts to slow down. It smooths out the signal and it starts to slow down that signal and starts to bring it down to the frequency range that you're accustomed to being able to use whenever you turn your lights on in your house. So it's going to drop it all the way down from whatever hertz range they're running it down, the power line, to the 60 hertz range. You know, and all of this is easy to understand when you figure out the number of turns a wire for, you know, voltage, number of turns a wire for whichever specific frequency range you want to get to. So you're taking a high voltage, high pressure, and you're dumping it into a larger space where basically now it slows it down, it spreads it out, and brings it down to a usable power again. this is what they're showing in this deal. But they're also, when you get down to the end of this particular podcast, they show some pretty impressive things that the high voltage is capable of doing at that frequency range. And the simple of it is, if you think about plasma, and you think about like neon, argon, or even halogen, or whatever. Halogen would probably be the most impressive one, because if you can energize that plasma, the heat of that plasma can actually heat that element enough where you get visible light out of that that halogen bulb without having it connected conventionally like you would your normal, you know, the way that you would run that halogen bulb. So let's keep rolling here.
Okay, we'll take a brief pause here and we'll get into our experimental setups. Okay, our first experiment is we'll run the light bulb conventionally in the electromagnetic fashion, where the circuit is a closed loop or a true circuit. And then what we're going to do is we're going to pull the plug and see if the light bulb still lights up. And we'll start off with the conventional circuit method, energize it, and of course the bulb lights up. Now what we're going to do is we're going to pull the plug on the bulb. The light bulb still lights up, so we're starting to get a rather novel thing going on here. You can see the wire is even quite energized. Our voltage is on it.
Okay, pause that. They're running basically an incandescent light bulb the conventional way. And then when he takes off one of the deals, which would basically open that circuit, it'd be like turning the light switch off. But because of the way that this energy is being used, that light bulb is still able to stay on. And it's basically now become a single wire light bulb. And so this is what they've been trying to explain about how this energy actually moves from one place to the next, and the capabilities of it, which is what Tesla was talking about. You know, whenever you're sending wireless energy, you got to be able to turn that back into something on the other side. And so he had a lot of different circuits that, you know, would do just that. It would bring that back down to the standard power that you were accustomed to using. All these radio frequencies out there, you think about a 50,000 watt transformer, or a 50,000 watt transmitter, or 50,000 watt transmitter, it don't matter. Sending a radio signal out so you can listen to your favorite radio station and your tunes. That's a lot of power. Where's all that power go? It gets spread out all over the place. But it's at a higher frequency range, so it's not going to run your house like you would think. But you can actually capture that energy and bring it back down into usable current. How much you get will determine on how you designed your system. But, you know, the whole key is that None of that energy got lost in the process of the way that it was being shipped out there. Otherwise, your radio would be choppy at best, you know. If you got any kind of interference in between you and the radio tower, you'll notice that the signal's breaking up because some of that's going somewhere else. It's not making it to your receiver on your side. So, you know, you go park at the, car wash or something like that. If you're close to those metal buildings will be absorbing some of that power, and so your signal will go in and out. It used to be really bad back in the old days with AM radio. You go underneath a power line and your doggone radio would turn all staticky. But once you understand that, and you understand the different frequency ranges, that energy will pass right through any solid object. It doesn't matter. That's how come you're able to, get a signal inside your house, unless you live inside a metal building, which could make that signal a little bit weaker, and you don't have a direct line of sight with a tower any longer. But at a higher frequency range, it'll walk right through that wall. Won't even be affected by it. So anyway, let's keep going here.
Yeah, bulb readily indicates the part of the charge. Okay, turn off the power. Now what we're going to do, let's go back to our diagram here. What we did in disconnecting the plug is we switched to this configuration here where there's no connection on the other end of the light bulb. Okay, now what we're going to do is hook an ammeter up to ground. We have a Weston, or Simpson in this case, thermo ammeter, which is not very susceptible to spurious readings because it takes actual heating to produce a result. And we're going to plug this into the output end of the coil and see how much current the system delivers to the ground. Reference to our drawings over here, this is now our setup. And if we energize the system, find that we have roughly 0.68 amperes of current flowing out of one terminal in the ground. Hence the Tesla wireless transmitter. Turn off the power. Okay, and after a brief pause, we're going to go through our experiments where we hook various devices in between the two coils and see how they propagate these currents.
Okay, pause this right here. So, you know, they're getting ready to do some other experiments in here to show how different devices actually function within these fields and so on. But the simple of it, when, if you get a chance to watch these videos, it's pretty interesting to see, you know, how some of these light bulbs are working. And if you understand how this energy is traveling, and you understand that the only thing that frequency even means is how fast that these pulses are coming out, you know, at what timing they're coming out, it's speeding up, slowing down, that's it. That is the simple of the whole entire deal. Frequency is how frequent these pulses are coming out. And so 60 hertz, you know, 60 times per cycle or whatever, you know, that's, you know, obviously slower than, you know, way up in the megahertz range like your remote control cars, your RC cars, or your you know, your cell phone. It's working up there in some serious you know, higher frequency ranges. And at those higher frequencies, they don't meet near the resistance that the lower frequency do, and so you're able to get a lot more current flow at lower frequencies than you are at the higher frequencies. However, you can always step that back down to, if you need more current flow, you can always step it back down to bring it back up to where it'd be more in line with the way the conventional measurements would go. So, back in the day when I was talking about, I didn't care about current watts and amps, and everybody got all crazy about it and got all mad because they didn't think I knew what I was talking about. I was trying to explain to them back then what these folks were trying to explain to them right now, that you know, this energy is a different type of energy. It's not electricity in the same sense as the standard model. You know, his standard model is there's a lot of current coming out of those wall outlets, and that's enough current to kill you. But the way that this energy was traveling without meeting the resistance, without having all that current, it wasn't destructive. See, the way that we're using energy right now is destructive. It's a brutal method of forcing these electric motors to run. You don't need near the amount of power to run these motors that we're actually pushing to them. And whatever that motor can't accept, something's got to give. Whatever power that your actual electric heater needs to run, whatever it cannot accept, something's got to give. So the energy comes in, it hits the electric motor or the electric heater, and whatever it can't use, it's trying to push back in the opposite direction. It's like hitting a brick wall. And so that energy now, because it's AC current, is bouncing back and forth between the appliance and the wall. And so you start noticing, because of all that resistance and all that current trying to force its way in, the motor's getting hotter, the wiring's getting hotter, the wall outlet's getting hotter. And then at certain point, because your breaker switches in your breaker box are thermally reactive, when they get to a certain temperature, they will click and shut the power off so that you don't have a wire fire. And as long as they don't fail, then, you know, everything's good. It shuts the power off and you go fix the problem and then you turn the thing back on. So if you plug too many things into one outlet, and that power is sending it back and forth and back and forth into the appliances and the wall outlet, eventually something's got to give. It reaches its thermal limit, and then the breaker will kick off again. So, you know, that's a protection put into place so you don't burn your house down with the power. But it's amazing that, you know, a lot of people don't understand how simple this concept is. You know, when you turn your garden hose on and you got this water flowing out the garden hose, you ever noticed how, you know, it's flowing at a certain volume, and then if you put your thumb over there and hold that water back and that water has any path through, it will raise that pressure up and you can squirt that water clear across the yard, whereas before it would only go a few feet out in front of you. Well, now you've restricted that flow, and so all that current pushing its way through there is now raising up the pressure and able to squirt it clear across the deal. Because I'm not sure exactly how much pressure your average deal, I've heard somewhere up to maybe even 60 PSI. You know, ironically, that's close to the 60 hertz range of electricity, but it all works the same way. It all works the same exact way. Water and electricity and pressure and current is all the same exact thing. The amount of volume of energy that you could push down or pull down and allow to flow through is the same exact thing. Whether you're talking about water pressure, air pressure, or electrical pressure, it doesn't matter. It's all the same way. That energy is traveling the same exact way, and the same exact trick to be used on both sides of the fence. You can ramp that water pressure up to the extent where you can literally create a water wave inside the pool that eventually starts slopping the water over the side because of the way you're pulsing that into that pool. So, you know, when you think about you know, water, you got a swimming pool, and when you think about electricity, you got a storage bank like a capacitor or even a battery. You know, a dead battery is something where the battery finally both sides have equaled themselves out. They still have that energy capability, but the energy is just like water. Water will always find its level. Electricity will always find its level as well. Once it levels out, we got a dead battery. Well, once it the water all levels out, you ain't got no more pressure to you know, one side being more pressurized than the other, it's going to try to take its path across to the other side and balance it back out again. So that's what a lot of people haven't tried to, you know, figure out. It's that ridiculously simple, folks. It is that ridiculously simple. And you throw in all the other high-tech terminology, your average Joe's eye roll back in the back of their head and they won't understand what it is that you're trying to say. And that's why we're in the state of affairs that we're in today. Nobody explained science to me the way that I'm trying to explain it to the world. It's everything around you is energy. And if you understand how to use that energy, then you can have exactly what we need. They said we had an energy crisis. We ain't got no energy crisis. We've never had an energy crisis. We're not going to run out of crude oil. And, you know, as far as the electricity grid going down, well, you know, if you run it the way you're running it, there's a possibility that it can go down. Something has to fail. It's going to reach a thermal breakdown. You're going to have a surge over here that's going to overcharge that. Something's going to fail, and, you know, you'll have a power outage. You know, so So, using it the way that Tesla was talking about, you wouldn't have that issue. Because it would have been a wave going out. And if somebody's system did fail for some strange reason, all the other systems around it would have still remained functioning as long as they didn't have the same flaw in the system. So it don't matter. It don't matter how many coils you got in between there. Once you once you touch one side over there, the energy is going to want to go to that one because that's where the ground is. But if everybody's touching it at the same time, the energy is equally distributed out to all of them at the same time. So if you got the same exact ground that they got on their side, then that energy will be equally distributed to the earth ground on all sides involved. So if you had a receiver coil like the Tesla coil in your yard and everybody else had one as well, and you sent that signal out, that signal in itself would not run your house in that range that it's traveling at. But once it got to your house and you understood how the transformer actually functions, you would step that down to a usable voltage that you would then in turn could start using your measurements of current watts and amps and see how much power you're using on the other side. But either way, that that energy from that stage, it's not going to run your house. These appliances weren't designed like that. But you can design. There have been people out there who have designed to use this type of voltage, this type of energy to actually build electric motors that were specifically engineered to run at these higher frequencies and higher voltages. So let's keep going here.
Okay, now we have our two coils set up with our series path, our terminals. In this case, our terminals will be here on the workbench. Terminal from the transmitting end through the loading coil, and the terminal to the receiving end, and of course we can connect various items in between. And at the receiving end we have a pickup thermal milliamp meter to measure the amount of induction the device is receiving, and that will be our determination of how effective each of our three items are here for the transmission currents from the transmitter to the receiver.
So can you just describe this array, this situation here? What do you got? You've got two turns of 14 gauge wire and a little magnetic pickup coil that determine how strong the field is around the coil. And of course, that gives us an indication of how effective each of the items is in conveying the current from the transmitter to the receiver. All right, great.
Okay, we'll start off with just a regular wire connection. And we've got the power supply that will give us a reading on the milliamp meter, which is here.
About half scale, looks like a 72 milliamp.
72 radio frequency milliamp. Okay, turn the power off.
Pause that for a second. He actually has a meter that you put a few turns of wire on there to act as an antenna on the back of a milliamp amp meter, and you know he's getting 72 milliamps just out of the air. Now, if he moved that thing even closer into that field, the heart of that field is the strongest portion of that magnetic field, it would get even higher yet. So, like I said, it's all about if you understand how this energy is traveling. If you understand where the strength of this field is, on the outskirts you might get 72 milliamp, but on the center of it you're going to get higher because it's a stronger pulse right there in that portion of it. So let's keep rolling here.
Next thing we'll put in is a plasma column. And we'll energize the power.
Slightly less, about 65, 66.
Okay. The next thing we'll insert in is a series parallel bank of incandescent bulbs.
Now it's a lot lower, about 50 milliampers.
Okay, so we can see now we have a definite difference between transmission through a plasma column and transmission through what would represent an effective length of conventional transmission line, in other words, wired with resistance. plasma column tends not to have any resistance, where the conventional transmission medium tends to exhibit resistance. And of course, in direct connection, all these factors are so small that they don't really appear. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to get into some of the effects of the illumination that comes off of these incandescent bulbs, which contain vacuum, when run off of these currents. And we're going to do a comparison between a bulb running off of 60 cycles and a bulb running off of high frequency right next to each other. And this will lead us into our second Tesla patent, which is the transmission of electricity by radiant means. And we're going to show how DC can flow through space with only one wire. So we'll take a brief break here and set up our new experimental apparatus. Okay, here we have two conventional light bulbs. And they're 15 watt, 120 volt. We'll bring one up close to the camera here so the construction of the bulb can be seen.
It's too close. Yeah. Just, yeah, back there is fine. Get a sharp focus on this. You have to go farther away. They're about there. That's fine. Yeah, so you can see the filament. It's a little ring filament. That's great.
Right, and one interesting feature of these bulbs is they have a very big vacuum space, which is not usually found in most light bulbs, and they're not filled with gas like most light bulbs are. These are vacuum light bulbs. So we'll have two of them here. This one and this one. One will run off of conventional 60-cycle alternating current, and the other one will run off of the longitudinal current. And we can see the brightness is pretty close to the same. Now, Tom, come over and see if the experiment is any different between the lights involved. Okay, well, one thing I do notice just visually, and we really can't record this because we don't have the proper detectors, but just the character of the light. This the electromagnetic light, transverse, looks somewhat reddish to my eye, and this looks somewhat bluish. And it just feels kind of hot, like a regular bulb. Around this one here, I feel a pressure coming off, a charge and a pressure, which I felt a little shock there also. Oh. And but the character of the light is definitely different. There is a distinct pressure, and the higher up we turn the power going in, the stronger the pressure is. And now we'll give another demonstration which shows another characteristic of this opposite to the pressure. Okay, one other thing I'd like to point out is the fact that this situation over here is very stable and quiet. We have, according to the Variac, 115 volts across the bulb. This light bulb here, the socket is arcing over inside, indicating there's several thousand volts across the bulb. So you can start to see some difference happening here. Now what happens is when you have gas in the bulb, as well as the filament, this very high voltage that appears across the bulb energizes the gas, and the end of the bulb would be a full-spectrum light bulb, which still retains its incandescent characteristics. But these bulbs being vacuum, we can't really fully demonstrate this. Now what we're going to do next is we have a force coming off the bulb, then we can study this force. So what we'll do is turn the power off for a second here, and we have a little piece of copper strip dangling from insulated tape. We'll just center this up here a little bit. Lighten it up.
No, it's going to be lower.
Why not? Okay, first we'll bring the strip near the Tesla current bulb. Turn it on. See the traction. Go and turn out that
couple of move it slightly farther away. And let me get a real time focus
on the power on. I'll bring it there and see where it folds in. They want to hang it on there. Okay, now what we'll do next. Stop.
So that's just a piece, that's a piece of copper foil.
Copper foil, copper tape.
Hanging on a piece of
masking tape. Turn on conventional, and of course you see we get no effect.
Even closer, right?
Right up to it, and as can be expected, there's really not much of anything happening there.
Right, okay.
Just a little bit of residual charge that was left on the metal. And we'll go back to this one. And we can see the traction. Okay, we'll turn the power off. Now we can say, well, it's just high voltage. But what we'll do at this point.
What he's showing in this deal is a piece of copper tape that they got hanging off another piece of tape that is just dangling down there, and with conventional electricity nothing happens, but with this particular style of energy you get that static attraction, like you would if you put your rub your hair on a balloon and put it next to water, you see how that water will actually bend towards that balloon. So you know, there's something going on there, which is a unique anomaly that if you understand what you're seeing going on there, then you start to think about what Tom Bearden and everybody was talking about pulling energy from the vacuum. It's attracted to this particular waveform, this particular style of energy, just like static electricity. So there's a whole lot more that meets the eye. That's why this video right here, I think if you watch the demonstration that they do, you might see something a little bit different going on here.
Here.
So now what you're bypassing the light bulb.
Bypassing the light bulb.
So we're just running the current past.
Just to strip up the high voltage itself next to the thing.
Okay.
Turn it on. No traction. As we can see, there's definitely charge there. Point right up to it. No desire at all.
So what you're saying is that the attraction is related to the action that's happening in the bulb.
Right. The bulb is producing rays. As well as light rays, it's producing another form of ray which exhibits mechanical action at a distance. The human body experiences it as pushing out, but material objects experience it as pushing in.
Okay. Can we see that effect one more time? Start with it just a little bit farther away. We can turn this so we can have an idea. Now let me just focus right tight in there. Okay.
Ready?
Hold it right in.
There it goes. Okay, now what this does is bring us to a whole new area of Tesla's wireless power transmission, which we'll get into part two. And we'll go back to the original pattern and start out from there. So we'll take a brief break here. Okay, here we're looking at Nikola Tesla's patent number 685957, apparatus for the utilization of radiant energy. Now, what Tesla was very interested in was the propagation of light and currents, beams of light and current through space, and also on how to receive these, both send and receive. And here we see the apparatus for receiving, which is basically a small condenser, one end to ground, the other end up into space, and you could pick up various cosmic radiations, such as solar. And Tesla also claimed that some of these radiations from outer space moved at 50 times the velocity of light, although there's no exact verification of that. And here we see an apparatus, a carbon arc, charging this. And down at the bottom here we see a light bulb, single wire bulb, energizing the apparatus. And what we're going to do now is show you this experiment, charge a capacitor from a bulb, and show you the discharge from it.
Okay, what we have here is a capacitor, television doorknob capacitor, 500 micro-microfarads, at 20,000 volts, and it's connected to ground, sink. In the other terminal of this capacitor, we're going to bring near this light bulb and see if we can charge the capacitor up like Tesla did with the radiations or forces emanating from the light bulb. So we'll energize the circuit, and we'll hold the other pole of the capacitor some distance away from the bulb. Okay, let's see if we can charge on it. We have a small neon bulb here. Capacitor seems to want to go away. Uh, just
a small flash on the neon bulb.
Let's do it once more.
So let's start by shorting the capacitor completely to handle the doubters that we're going to start with a charged capacitor. Okay, so that's completely shorted to ground, both ends, so that you can believe that this is an absolutely dead short, it's an uncharged capacitor.
Rolling
wire. Let's
try it again.
This time, let's leave it near there to try and develop a bigger charge.
You have to determine exactly what part of the bulb itself doesn't charge yet.
You can bring it down by the side so it's closer to the center.
The side is where I feel the greatest pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I think that'll do it.
Okay, and we'll try and keep the neon bulb in our view here, so if it flashes at all.
Well, very small flash that time. Let's try it one more time. Okay, try it again. One time I got a very large snap on it. Yeah,
there we go.
Okay. So what it wants is to be held one more spot, or one particular spot, not moved around. So it indicates the charge is different in different directions. Okay. Now, what we should do is bring it near the wire, one of the hot points around here, and make sure it's not just the electricity itself that's charging the wire. The corona there, and the current is flowing into the capacitor. Very small flash. Let's try it one more time. Cause a certain amount of rectification because it's an electrical conductor, so we will expect a small charge to exist on the capacitor. Now we'll go back to the light bulb. Okay. Snap. Definite difference. Okay, one other experiment we'll do is we'll bring it near the very high voltage of the neon or argon lamp. And there'll be some residual charge, I'm sure. But no snap. And we'll go back one more time. Light bulb. Okay, now what we're going to do next, our next test setup, is we're going to attempt to demonstrate the actual transmission of DC through free space.
All right, so that's pretty much the end of that podcast, but what they just demonstrated was that they had one wire on one side of a capacitor hooked to earth ground, and then they showed in different portions where they put that capacitor that it would charge that capacitor up with that style of energy. So he literally had the capacitor on the outside of this incandescent light bulb that was vacuum filled, no gas inside of it, that it was vacuum inside that bulb, and so he was able to charge that capacitor up and get that light to flash, which basically is what Tesla was showing everybody back in the day about how to take, you know, you can generate wireless energy, you can bring it back down and use it again, or you can do like with his radiant energy patent where he was actually picking up, you know, the equivalents of radiation from space, or, you know, even static buildups in the air. you know, and so taking that and bringing it back down into usable current again. So, you know, the whole concept of cold electricity, moving energy around without, you know, the destructive nature of what you would see in the conventional system, because, you know, we use energy in a brutal fashion. And you know, it's pretty destructive. It tears things up. I put a couple different versions of that particular lecture, that experiment there, into the chat room. But I wanted to play this one particular one here. This is one I was talking about earlier.
Okay, what does this look like? I'll tell you what it is. This is a 10 kilovolt transformer. Focus. So this here is your line coming from the wall, which is 120 volts alternating current. This steps up that alternating current to 10 kilovolts of alternating current. The 10 kilovolts of alternating current are directly connected to a spark gap, and then off of the spark gap we have these two capacitors. So those are just homemade foil-wound capacitors separated by painting plastic as dielectric. And the simple thing about this circuit is that we can manifest many different types of electrical energy, some of which are being called cold electricity, some of which are being called dielectricity, longitudinal waves, and scalar waves. I'm going to show you quick what the schematic looks like. So here's your in outlet, there's your step-up transformer, here's your spark gap, and there's your capacitor plates, here's your load for your light bulb. So in no way is the load from the light bulb connected to any form of natural conventional electricity. Pretty simple.
I'll pause that just for a second, because you'll hear a difference in what Eric Dollard and Peter Lindemann were doing with this setup right here. Even though this is a simpler setup to show the same kind of effects and stuff, he's using an old extension cord or piece of electrical cord with the plug as a spark gap for his setup, so that high voltage can back and forth across that gap and then transfer that energy into capacitors, which each have a single wire coming out of them, and then that will complete the circuit on the bulb. So, you know, with that said, you're going to hear a difference in sound, and actually when you're watching this video, you'll notice that you'll start getting lines come up the video, because it's interfering with the digital camera that he's actually using. That's how much power is actually being generated, and a lot of that's coming from that spark gap. And that's why in the other video they use the one hydrogen filled vacuum spark gap, so that it's not interfering near as bad with the camera that it would otherwise. So there are things that, if you understand about how high voltage works and high frequency, you can make shielding to guide this energy to wherever you want it to go, so it's not something that's going to cause a problem. So anyway, let me play some more of this.
So one of the things that I'm going to show you here is that this electricity can work in many different ways. One of the things that I want to show you quick is this cold electricity can obviously just light a light bulb. But that is not the unique thing about this cold electricity. Cold electricity can light a light bulb now. To anyone who looks at this, they would say, well, that doesn't make sense. This is just water straight from the tap. Nothing special about it. I'm going to dip those in there. So now the whole thing is submerged in water.
Pause this just for a second. Water straight from the tap could, depending on which area that he is in, could have impurities like chlorine or fluoride in there. which could affect the conductivity of the water, but nonetheless, what he's about to show is pretty impressive.
Happens when I turn the cold electricity on.
So he just lit up the light bulb while it was submerged in the water and stuck his finger in there.
Ah! You say, okay, well, that's just a fluorescent bulb. Fluorescent bulbs can be lit from anything. Right? Sure. They can. What's this? This is a filament bulb. It's an automotive filament bulb. It's 12 volts. Probably like 1 amp. Kind of strange, there's not much to that, right? All the way in the water. That shouldn't light at all, right? We should not have any light lighting up in that.
Light bulb lit up.
Let's see.
It's a 60 watt bulb.
40 watt bulb.
He said 40, but it's actually a 60. Huh. And he sits it down in the water where it should be.
Should not light up.
Should be a dead short.
Plus, this 40 watt bulb will not light up if I plug it into. Oh, this is 60 watt. Excuse me. This is 60 watt.
And this particular light bulb is burned out.
Version of the cold electricity circuit as done by your very
so that's enough of that right there, but nonetheless you see, if you watch this video, something pretty amazing going on there. He's able to light that light bulb up. While the light bulb's in the water, it should be shorting out right about that time. That water is, to some extent, conductive because tap water has impurities in there. Most generally, when you put electricity to water, if the water is not naturally conductive unless it has impurities in it. But even with that, even the slightest bit of impurity should have created a dead short in that water, and that light bulb should not have lit up. So I think he did do something else here. Let me go ahead and finish this out.
So that's a 60 watt bulb. Ooh, actually producing quite a bit of heat. That bulb's actually pretty warm.
All right, pause there for a second.
The bulb was warm.
That incandescent light bulb that wouldn't work in a standard outlet because the element inside there is burnt out. It's split in two, so it's not making a complete circuit. He was actually able to generate heat with that as well. So that's what I was saying earlier about if you understand how this energy travels, and you want to make a heater that doesn't take near the amount of input that your normal resistive heater with tungsten or nichrome wire would normally use, or even the infrared ones that, you know, use a different type of bulb that will produce infrared light or heat or whatever, they take a lot more electricity to run. But this particular version of how this energy is actually traveling, it has some unique qualities to it that's able to make it still light that bulb up, even though that light bulb isn't a good light bulb. Now, the little one he had is a good light bulb, but either way, they all work, from the fluorescent to the good little 12-volt incandescent light bulb and the bad 60-watt bulb. They still all lit up using that same type of energy.
It's just normal water. It should short the circuit out. Circuit doesn't short out because it's an unconventional type of electricity. This type of electricity is can manifest itself in several different ways. This is my favorite one, just because it doesn't really make any sense. Because you can see the leads are obviously open. Two alligator clips.
He reconnected that light bulb, the little one, the 12 volt. Basically, it's like the one you got in your dome light in your car. And he's got both leads down in the water and is still able to light that bulb. And he wants to get some suspended in the water. Alright, so anyway, to recap, this whole entire deal of cold electricity, basically using energy in a completely different fashion than before. The way that we use our power right now, it's brutal and it's destructive. It causes, we're pushing too much power to things. Don't need near the amount of power to get the results that we want, whether it be for work, for turning electric motors, or even for lighting purposes. In the very least, lighting should be so much more efficient. And I know that there's some people who've already figured this out, because you can go out and buy LED systems that will connect to your old fluorescent bulb ballast. You just plug them right in just like you would the normal deal, and they don't burn out, but they're more efficient because they don't need near the amount of power to do what it is that they do, to give you more light out of it. So there are some folks who paid attention in that type of stuff right there. That's why you got different things like those LEDs that you can plug right in without having to change any of the wiring. We're using the same ballast. Now, if you got an old ballast and the ballast is starting to go bad, they'll shut themselves off when they get too hot. But, it's the amount of power that you're having to put to these things in order to be able to get them to do what they do for the amount of light, lumens that they push out. It's pretty doggone impressive. But using energy in a completely different fashion, we could re-engineer our electric grids and, combination of wireless power, combination of single wire power, or even the conventional deal right there. You could send this more or less the equivalence of a radio frequency down the wire and do the same exact job. And in incidents where you needed the current and the watts to it, you could step that power up using storage banks like capacitor technology, and you could put that power back in there. Now, the difference in that whole entire system, when I'm running this system, pushing that load out there, and then I finally get down and I start trying to draw that power off like I do normally, then I'm back to where it was before, where these, like a 30-amp motor controller will actually start to generate heat because it's pushing too much power to that motor controller that it doesn't need that amount of power in order to function. Those things will work on less power than you're actually pushing to them. So you'd actually have to design a resistive circuit or something in order to drain some of that power away from the appliance that you want to run, so that you're never pushing more power to that than it can actually handle. So if you have a sensing portion of your circuit that would sense any back pressure whatsoever coming off of that electric motor or that circuit that you're trying to run, it would automatically dump that power off somewhere else. The excess power would go down to the next appliance in line, and that means that your first appliance that you're running, it's never going to get hot. And then the same thing on the second one. It will never get hot. It will never be able to reach its thermal breakdown, which means that your fan will last pretty much indefinitely as long as the bearings don't wear out and they're lubricated. That fan could last forever. And if it never reaches its thermal breakdown of the actual lubrication in the bearings, then that means the lubrication would maintain a constant viscosity, and it would never, ever wear that grease out or whatever lubrication you're using. And so that thing would never fail. No bearing failure, no core or transformer or coils, wires, whatever, none of them would ever be able to reach the thermal breakdown, so they would never fail. So you would have a super efficient electrical system that would be using power in a completely different fashion, and then when you did want to use it in the conventional sense, you could still protect your appliances without causing any harm to them by ensuring that only the amount of power actually necessary to run that given product or that given appliance is allowed to go to that. Anything else that is bouncing back in between the electrical fan or motor or light bulb or whatever, anything excess that is bouncing back and forth between the wall outlet and that appliance is guided on down the line to wherever else it might be needed. So that means that your next one in line, it'll have what it needs, and then it'll send what it doesn't need on down the line again. So you can never, ever overpower your appliances this way. You don't need all that current to run these things. You know, you're cramming all this power to it. You're thinking you're gonna get more RPMs or more torque out of it, and you're not. You're just simply not, because that motor can only handle so much. Now, sure, when you push a lot of power to it, it's going to speed up. It's going to speed up multiple things. It's going to speed the motor up. It's actually going to speed the thermal breakdown point up. And eventually, that motor is not going to be able to handle that excess charge, and it's going to get hot. The insulation on the coil windings is going to fail. And even after that happens, if the wires don't go before the bearings, lose all their lubrication because the viscosity dropped down because of the thermal quality or quantity is going on, and basically your lubrication doesn't work anymore, and your bearings start eating themselves alive. It's so ridiculously simple, folks. So ridiculously simple, it's mind blowing. If we really wanted to take the time to investigate what it is that I've been saying, what all these other individuals have been saying, what Tesla was talking about, we should be using energy in a completely different fashion today. We should have systems that are running on the equivalence of what they would call cold electricity, safe electricity. It might give you a little shock and wake you up a little bit, but it's not going to kill you if you accidentally touch something that is energized by this particular range of frequency of energy. It's not going to kill you. That's where the cold electricity thing comes into play. It'll do the work. Voltage is pressure. You get the same amount of light, you get the same amount of work. You just have to re-engineer a few things to work differently. All those magnetic fields care about, they don't have to be 3 foot outside the transformer or 3 foot outside the the doggone motor, whatever. See, you can take one of these wireless AC testers, and you could put it anywhere near an AC device, and the doggone thing will actually pick up the waste energy coming off of that any given device. And so I'm trying to see if I can find mine, but a wireless AC tester will show you there's a magnetic flux in the field line that extends past whatever device you're running, and all of that essentially is wasted energy. So, you know, I'm sitting here, I got my wireless AC tester out here. Let me see if I can find the power cord. Hold on here. I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but outside of that, I don't have to have it plugged in. It will register that doggone voltage. It will register the excess field that's around that. You don't need that much power in order to run what it is that you're running. So, you know, this thing will go off with radiant energy. It'll go off with, you know, the fluctuation in the AC wire or whatever. And you'll hear it, and that's not even touching the wire. That's a wireless AC tester. Go out and check them out. You'd be amazed at how far away from the power lines you can actually get these things to go off. And so that means that there's energy basically escaping, being wasted out of that deal. But with this other type of energy, you still get the measurement, but you don't get the loss. It's pretty amazing. So, outside of that, those links are posted in the Super chat room. And so if you want to watch those videos, I just kind of played some of the portions of it, because some of the things that they were talking about were, you know, important notes about what it is that I'm explaining. So, if you take that energy coming out of the wall, it is capable of doing a whole lot more than what we use. A lot of wasted energy throughout the entirety of the way that our grid, from the power grid outside to the power grid in your house, and the way that you're using this power. Simple as if you plug in your phone charger, your phone gets charged up, and you leave the plug-in in the wall, and you walk away, your phone's charged up, but that primary coil in that phone charger is still using power, and it's releasing waste energy in the form of heat when the thing's just sitting there. The primary is being pulsed, it's actually pushing power out, but the power ain't going into anything. It's just kind of sitting there or being wasted. So you're wasting electricity with those transformers that are plugged in. Even other appliances that you're not using, your TV, you got things that are constantly draining power when they're on standby, even though you're not using them. So if you had a place for that power to go for someplace useful, instead of that power being wasted on standby, it's actually being sent down into a storage bank. Then you have the unfortunate episode where the power grid goes down for a moment or so, and you still have a backup surplus of power, so it don't even affect you in the least. And you'd be surprised at how little amount of power that it would actually take in order to charge a large bank. You know, these doggone solar panel sets that you got, you see people out there, they got these massive arrays out there in their yard, takes up a lot of space. And when they're using them, they're not using them as efficiently as they could, so those doggone things are basically, you know, wasting energy. I mean, the energy was free, it came from the sun, but nonetheless, you could take that energy and you could use these concepts that Tesla showed and all these other folks have been demonstrating, and use that energy in a completely different fashion, store it, move it around, keep it busy, so to speak. So, as long as this energy could never find its balance, then it's going to constantly have something, you know, on a higher pressure than the other, and so it's going to want to flow somewhere. So you just decide where you want it to flow, and you move that energy around to where you need it at any given time. So I did a video a long time ago called 9 Volts, which was pretty interesting, is where I explained about how that you can literally watch this circuit, you know, how the energy starts in the largest one and works its way down to the final, you know, stages of it, to where it's only like a little blinking LED and, you know, maybe a little piezoelectric speaker, you know, making a chirping noise or whatever. But you can see exactly what I'm saying, as far as how this energy is actually traveling. And the way that you're charging these things up, you can use static electricity to charge capacitors up. If you understand how capacitors actually function, you can use anything from a Van de Graaff to a Wimshurst generator to, you know, anything that builds static, the Lord Hawkesby device, the Lord Kelvin device, anything that generates static electricity, you can bring that down. The atmospheric group, they got about 400 to 200 foot poles up in the air or something like that, and they got wire that goes all the way around it, and these wires, they've covered it with, you know, like nanocarbon or something, basically graphene technology, and they're pulling static electricity out of the air and bringing about down to about 9,000 volts down to, you know, actually bringing 2,000 volts down, run it through a capacitor bank, and then on the opposite side, they got about 9,000 volts on the other side. And, of course, you're going to get the poo-pooers out there that always holler about, whoa, you can't run it on this little voltage or whatever. I don't know what it's going to take to get through those people's heads. The energy, you can change it, you can speed it up, you can slow it down, you can push it back into where it's usable current, where now your measurements, your current, your watts and amps make sense again. You can't use standard measuring equipment to measure this type of energy. They're not designed. The standard voltmeters, even the analog voltmeters, are not designed to register this type of energy. This is why in alternative energy community, when you start talking like I'm talking, everybody thinks you're nuts. But according to the laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so where does it go? And if you got losses in the system, where did those losses go? Explain that. So, if you figure out a way to move energy from point A to point B without meeting the resistance that's going to generate those losses in the form of heat, then you have no losses in the system. Plain and simple. So, once you meet resistance, then that can equal a loss. But if you know how to move that energy from one place to the next without that resistance, there is no loss. You sped it up, it's not traveling in the conventional sense. You know, like everybody thinks the energy's traveling through the wire when it's actually just kind of wrapping around using that wire as a railroad track, because it's the closest thing. That wire is actually like a ground, even if it's not connected to the ground for a certain extent. And the higher that voltage gets, that wire becomes, at the end of it, a spark gap. So it's going to grab on to that wire first, because that wire is as closest to that energy as possible. It's closer than any other object, so it's going to follow that wire, just like that wire was railroad tracks, like a monorail. And so when the voltage gets higher and higher and it finally gets down there, that energy reaches the tip and you start to see that little corona coming off the top of the tip of that wire. It's looking for a path to ground. And the higher the voltage gets, when it finally begins to start ionizing the atmosphere, the air, the particles, the dust in the air around it, it will literally create its own path to ground and then finally try to find its balance. But in the process, because of all that power that's available, you can get work done. You can generate light, you can generate heat, you can take specifically designed electric motors and get that particular, what would normally been junk energy, to run those motors, those light bulbs, and heating systems. So if you understand what I've tried to explain to you in this, just as this podcast alone, and if you go back and you look at some of my older videos and the things that I kept saying, the key things I kept trying to point out, the things about plasma, how you can see how magnetic fields will actually interact with plasma, and, you know, what plasma actually was or whatever, my terminology is never going to match the school books, because the school books aren't designed in a way that they're understandable to the average Joe. Unless they've been absorbed into this from start to finish, they wouldn't understand it. It's like, you know, talking Greek or going to the doctor and how the doctor writes down in Latin or something your predicament. You don't get it. And the vice versa works from, like, guys like Stan Myers trying to talk to a mainstream scientist. Their terminology is different. There's a communications gap in between there. And the science guy, he can't make no sense of what the Stan Myers was saying. So in his mind, Stan Myers is a pseudoscientist. Stan Myers was brilliant. He knew what he was talking about. He tried to explain it to this guy, but his terminology didn't match that terminology. Therefore, they pretty much thought he was a nut. And for that, we don't have near as many hydrogen vehicles that we should have on the road today. We don't have the technology. It never was pressed forward by the mainstream, but it was accepted by the alternative, which is the alternative energy community, and as well as those who want to suppress that energy but still be able to utilize that energy. They know it exists. We should be running our cars on electricity and pure distilled water without absolutely no carbon emissions, even though carbon emissions aren't a bad thing. They just don't understand science enough to understand that what's actually occurring. If you're worried about carbon emissions, then all you got to do is go a step backward and then turn around and re-engineer these dang engines to be have perfect burns every single time, and anything that would be an impurity out the exhaust would be recaptured and reused as fuel. So when it comes down to mad science, you can understand why it is that you know, I get so passionate about this deal, because I paid attention in science class. Now, granted, I'm not going to have the right terminology to explain to those college-educated geeks that think they're so intelligent that they just kind of miss everything that is even literally written in the laws of physics, and they misquote the laws of thermodynamics all the time. They don't believe perpetual motion's possible. They don't believe over unity's possible. They don't believe in zero point, which, you know, who cares? Give the devil his due. But when it comes down to free energy, if you can't find free energy, you simply have not been paying attention. You've not been looking hard enough. Now, when it comes down to devices that's going to run this inefficient system, that's where you and I come in together. You take your talents and your tools, mix them with my talent and my tools, and we put these concepts to work. It isn't like we don't have the answers. We got every single answer necessary to resolve every single problem that you can even remotely think about out here in the world today involving energy. And I'll even go as far as to say medicine and housing and food and all this other stuff. We have every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve all these problems. But the craziest thing about the whole deal is the resistance that you get from even the average Joe, who had been indoctrinated by the school system to not believe that things are possible. And once they get it stuck in their head that these things aren't possible, things that I talk about, things out of the realm of what the school book says is possible or not possible, seem to be a fairy tale. And so they're not willing to entertain that there is something else out there besides the system that is literally standing on their neck. And so they'll actually support the same system. They'll support the same system that will blatantly lie to their face. They don't care because they're comfortable in that system. The guys with the white coats, they're the smart ones, right? The teachers, the professors, the ones with the fancy plaque on the wall. So why should we listen to a guy like old crazy-haired Chaziz, the mad science dude? He's just a pseudoscience, he's an idiot, he's a whatever. Folks, I've heard it all. But I paid attention in science class. And I held their feet to the fire when they tried to tell me something contrary to what they were teaching. And whenever I saw the alternatives, when I saw that there was something more than meets the eye, I was willing to investigate it. And when I started hearing the problems that they said that we had energy crisis, we had wars over oil, we had, supposed global warming / climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. So they said they had a problem. And so I paid attention in science class. I stepped forward. I showed them there's the solution right there. It's been there all along. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, they had the first plasma reactor that I know of. It may not very well be the first plasma reactor, but it's the first one that they used to change AC current into DC rectified current to be able to run elevator motors. So, what else was going on there? Alright, we've got all kinds of technology, folks. We've got mind-blowing technology. And are we utilizing it to its fullest potential? Are we utilizing it to great efficiency? Well, I would have to say no. We're not. And that's why I do what I do. And when it comes down to, you know, all the people out there constantly complaining about our world's doomed, we're going to die. We're going to die in 12 years. It's probably less than that now because they've been talking about it for a while. But nonetheless, if we're going to die in that shorter period of time, wouldn't you think that you would want to listen to every single possible solution and at least investigate? Nope. Governments don't, and they're not interested. The corporations aren't interested. And most of the average Joes aren't interested. Most of it goes right over the top of their head because of their public indoctrination from the government school system. They're not willing to think outside the box. They're not willing to see that there are alternatives. But they are willing to complain. They are willing to panic children. Talk about doomsday coming around the corner. We're polluting our planet. We're killing off everything. You know, and it goes on and on. So the doomsdayer, the preachers of doomsday, or whatever you call them, they're winning. That's it. They're winning. It's going to take the average Joe to finally get it, that there are alternatives out there. And if you ain't willing to do the research, man, there's people out there that have already done the research for you. They found links. Stephen Gibbons, he made a resource page over there on ShazizRadio.com, and he's got link after link after link to all different types of alternative research, energy research, and more. He did that, and he did that out of kind of his heart to help everybody out. And so it'd be appreciated if you check it out, you know, if you're interested in alternative energy. And when you find something that you're interested in, you want to work towards making it happen, well, that's what we do, you know. And I'm trying to get my new lab together. When I do, I'll be on Twitch TV, I'll be on YouTube, live streams. I'll have all these systems put into place so that you can see what it is I've been yakking about all this time. Yeah, I put my money where my mouth is, folks. Go over there and attend the University of Mad Science. See if you got what it takes to be a mad scientist. That link is on the Super chat room. It's right above Steven's resource page. See if you can become a mad scientist. Print out your diploma there. And so, you know, I'm trying to do everything that I can to bring this information to the front. A lot of researchers didn't fare so well. And there's a lot of scam artists out there. But since I'm not begging you for money, since I'm not trying to sell you anything, since I'm just passing information, then you maybe want to take this a little bit more serious. Because ain't nobody going to be able to call me no scam artist. I'm not in this to get rich. I'm not in this to get famous. I'm not in it for fortune. None of that. No fame, no fortune, no notoriety. I'm not in for that. But I tell you one thing's for sure. I gave my word that I was going to study everything that there is to understand about alternative energy. And when I got that accomplished, I was going to share it with the power companies, every single one of their customers for free. And I meant it. So I'm on it. So if you're interested, hey, stay tuned. If you're not, I don't know what to tell you. Good luck paying your electric bill, because there's going to come a day when OSHA's is finally goes off the power grid. But when I do it, I guarantee you I'm going to do it with style. It's going to be some class involved in that one. But, you know, every day has its own own time frame. You'll see what I'm talking about. But I want to ensure that whenever I go off the power grid, everybody and his brother has the opportunity to do the same as well, so that that's what they choose. And every bit of information that comes my way, if I'm able to share it with you, then that's gonna benefit me, because I got to do what I said I was going to do. And I will be successful. Anyway, I've been talking for a long time, so I'm going to leave up out of here with, just a little bit of tunes, because I'm getting hoarse. You know, you talk and talk and talk and try to share information as fast and as furious as possible. Mad science is here because mainstream science dropped the ball. And as long as they said that there was a problem out there and nobody's willing to do anything about it, including the representatives that are crying wolf and saying there is a problem, including the people out there, the average Joe out there complaining about global warming, climate change, climate disruption, all the terrible woes and whatever, the doomsday professors of the world, you know, it... the fear-mongering, fear porn, whatever you want to call it. As long as they're going to keep on saying that there's a problem out there and somebody's willing to show them the solution and they're not willing to pay attention, then you have to question their motives. They want to sell you a carbon tax. They want to sell you higher-priced fuel, even though you can make the same fuel out of trash in your yard. But nonetheless, as long as you're willing to pay, they're going to be willing to accept. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Peace and love. If you like this podcast, share it. If not, then hey, I'll see you next time around. Take care. Peace and love, everybody.
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden mole boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
He's got a laptop. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.